It's Tuesday, June 22nd. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Matt Ford, and this is Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. We're breaking down NFL's COVID restrictions, Supreme Court rulings, and everything else to do with the NFL, including a quote by Tom Brady. Tom Brady going a little off script. I'm excited to do all that with Matt. Before we get going, some breaking news. I know I teased we have a big show coming. The show is still coming. But after we recorded, some news broke that is worth talking about. It's great news in my opinion. Raiders defensive end Carl Nassib comes out as gay. First active player in NFL history to come out while they're still active. He's played 73 games, had 20 career sacks. He's a veteran in the NFL. He's donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project, operates the Trevor Lifeline. It's a call line for LGBT kids and teens that focuses on suicide prevention. Also included in the story was a study that showed that all it takes is one accepting adult to decrease the risk of an LGBTQ kid committing suicide by 40%. So when people ask why now, obviously I'm very happy for Carl to be able to live the life he wants to live, especially openly, and also to help kids in the same situation as him. So congratulations to Carl for coming out, for letting it be known, for living his life. Wonderful, wonderful. And people have asked me, and they're going to ask me, and I'm telling you right now, overwhelming majority of the locker room does not care. Does not care one bit. We'll be very happy for Carl, right? We'll be very happy for him to have come out, for him to live his lifestyle the way he wants to. And it doesn't change your friendship with Carl. Carl was on Hard Knocks a couple years ago. He shared a clip of Finance. Like, he could tell guys like him on the team. This is not going to change that one bit. And yes, are there going to be players that aren't accepting of it? So be it. Like, whatever. There's always players that aren't accepting, just ours in society, of player's choice. I've always said, I don't care what people do off the field. As long as they can help me win on the field, I do not care. I think the majority of NFL players feel that way. So just wanted to say I'm very happy for Carl. I hope this leads to more players being able to live openly and to be able to feel more comfortable in their own skin. And look, he's not the only gay player in the NFL, okay? I'm just telling you right now. And hopefully this allows for more players to feel more comfortable in their skin and be able to come out. And so again, congratulations to Carl for making that announcement, for donating the money, for sharing some light on the Trevor Project. And now we get to the show. Me and Matt Ford, let's do it. How are you doing, buddy? It's been a week. How's your week?
I'm good, man. I think I was really alarmed by Tom Brady's appearance. Every time I see this man, he's like,
he looks younger.
He's like aged. But does he though? He looks like an alien. Like, things are just happening with his like facial bones that I just can't track. I can't like map the progress mentally. Are you aging? Are you moving laterally through time? Like, what's happening?
I did a thing this weekend, this idea that we're doing. And I'm not going to tell you guys now, but I'll tell you eventually. And I got some makeup done. I got some makeup done by some random makeup lady who was there. She said, "You know what, Jeff? You have beautiful skin."
Huh.
I was like, "Oh, all right. I mean, I don't know. You tell me. Like, you've been around me. My skin, I don't know. Is it beautiful in the webcam? I don't know." I was like, I feel like Tom Brady. Beautiful skin. Except I didn't have procedures for it.
Doesn't this remind you of those memes you see of like it's like a beautiful woman. It's like, you know, they use all these skin products, and then we use like the same loofah we wash our balls with. Like, nice skin.
It's like, I told my wife, I said, "Hon, you know, man, I got beautiful skin. I mean, you spent all that time on those lotions and those treatments and whatnot, and your boy over here barely wears sunscreen, shaves once a week, put no lotion on his face, and his skin is beautiful." So, yeah. Things I think are beautiful in the NFL right now. There's not a lot happening, but there is a big story about COVID protocols and something we're going to touch on that I think this will be a story at least probably through September. But Matt, let's start with that.
Yeah, I mean, so many ways to go here. Let's just start with the sort of basic big picture. So the league released new COVID protocols for the season and the preseason and training camp. And the big takeaways are that it's two different worlds. Vaccinated players have pretty limited restrictions. Obviously, like most of the rest of the country is sort of going in that direction. But for unvaccinated players, there's lots of hurdles, which, you know, is similar to what's happening in the NBA as well. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this gets navigated. Unvaccinated players, they're going to have travel restrictions. There's mask mandates. They're going to be tested every single day, where vaccinated players will not have that sort of commitment. There's quarantines, and then there's these huge fines for any time, up to $50,000 that any of these rules are broken. So there's a lot here, Jeff. What was your initial takeaway?
My initial takeaway was this was the closest you can get to mandating a vaccine without mandating a vaccine, right? We know that it's tough to mandate the vaccines when they're not FDA approved, obviously emergency use right now, but when they're not, when they get fully approved, maybe the NFL and other corporations decide to go to a different policy. But as of right now, you can't mandate that they take the vaccine. But what you can do, to your point, is make life pretty miserable for those who are unvaccinated. You're basically separated, right? You cannot use the hot tub or the sauna. You cannot eat in the meal room with the players that are vaccinated. You cannot be in the weight room, 15 players at a time limit if you're unvaccinated. You have travel restrictions. You might go on a separate plane or be quarantined in a hotel. You know, meeting time, you might have to be on Zoom while everyone else is in the meeting room. So it's really gonna divide the locker room. And I'm curious to see how quickly players who are unvaccinated get into the locker room and realize, oh, this is not where I wanna be. I'll get vaccinated. I'll do it to kind of be part of the teams. I think it is a competitive advantage or disadvantage, depending on how vaccinated your team is. And people say, well, why are you asking the players their opinions on this? We've heard from Cole Beasley, obviously. We've heard from Montez Sweat. We've heard from Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes, two players who have been vaccinated. We've heard from, you know, no comments from Sam Darnold and other players. The reason why people are asking, Matt, is because it is an actual competitive balance issue in the NFL. Let's take the Chiefs, for example, or the Falcons. They're two teams that supposedly have a higher than not vaccination rate. And part of that is being alluded to or attributed to Matt Ryan, the Falcons quarterback, getting vaccinated, telling his teammates about it. Patrick Mahomes getting vaccinated, telling his teammates about it. We know Bruce Arians, the Tampa Bay head coach, is like, look, get vaccinated players, right? Supposedly Mike Tomlin has been very vocal about this, players getting vaccinated. Same with Cam Hayward, who's obviously a leader. So it seems like the teams that have the most players, the most leaders, I should say, getting vaccinated are the ones that are ending up having this rate. So let's just say the Buffalo Bills, it seems, you know, there was some positive response from some of his wide receiver teammates when Cole Beasley tweeted out what he did. And let's say that room is unvaccinated, Matt. They've unvaccinated wide receiver room. They have a big game coming up. One guy gets close contact with someone else. That whole wide receiver room is out for the week. And now they lose a game. The Chiefs, is not happening to the Chiefs. Not happening to Tampa Bay. Not happening to maybe Baltimore or Cleveland, right? Like, and they, so this is why this is being asked. And Matt, I feel like we might feel the same way. This, I don't care to hear players' opinions on the COVID vaccine. I do not care to hear their opinions on politics. I don't care any of that. They're being asked about it because this is a competitive balance issue, in my opinion. They're being asked about it because they're leaders in the community. And the frustrating part about some of the responses is not that they're not getting vaccinated, all right? It's your choice to get vaccinated. That's your right. I'm not arguing that. It's the lack of basic understanding about what is going on with the vaccine and how it works, how it's implemented, what it does, what it can do, where we are in society right now. So, you know, these players, the things they're saying, complaining about, I'm like, you don't even know the basics of what you're upset about. And that's what's bothering, as a former player, just someone who, and look, we're a pro-vaccine podcast. I hope you get vaccinated. Hope you get back to real life. If that bothers you, I'm sorry. Again, it's your choice to do whatever you want. But like, if I was so strongly against something, I feel like I would know the basic parts of what I'm against. And it feels like some of these players don't. And that to me feels like that's what's bothered me the most, right? It's not that Cole Beasley put out a long statement or Cole Beasley's anti-vaccine or whatever it is. It's that the things he's saying don't make any sense. They're not a good argument for not getting the vaccine. And that's what bothered me the most. And this is it. Set aside Cole Beasley's feelings. These feelings, at least according to people around the NFL, are 20% of players feel this way, right? So not a majority, but a minority. But the NFLPA's job is to generally look out for the entire operation, right? So the NFLPA is going to say, hey, look, yeah, we might have not asked you, Cole Beasley, how you feel about this, but guess what? We're the PA. We're looking out for the bottom line. And we don't want to move a game to Tuesday next year. We don't want the Broncos to play a game with no quarterbacks. We don't want there to be a cancellation and seven games be shuffled around. We want to play a full season on time when it is. And the fastest way to do this is that the most players vaccinated continue on with business. So that's where I stand. Again, Cole Beasley, Montez Sweat, whoever it is, Sam Darnold, no comment. Don't want to do it. Fine. But at least understand like what you're upset about.
So true. You know, we're not the resource people need to learn about vaccines, but get vaccinated, please. The point of, I think what you were saying, Jeff, is Cole Beasley, by making this stand that I think to any person who could, you know, think critically and unemotionally about this issue makes no sense, could cost the Bills, let's just say, seeding in the playoffs, could cost them a home playoff game if, as you mentioned, Jeff, like, you know, the whole wide receiver group has to miss a week because Cole Beasley doesn't care to get vaccinated. Like, that's a real impact. And that's, you know, that's what this whole crisis has been about, largely, is our shared responsibility. I think, to your point, you know, you said something true, which is, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, like, and you live in the USA, like, you do have the choice, right? Like, it's up to you. In the NFL isn't a usual job. The NFL pays you, you know, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars, or at least hundreds of thousands of dollars at the minimum to play. And there's lots of people with lots of families and lots of relatives and lots of places they travel and all of these ripple effects. It's a huge league. Older coaches, you know, everybody, think about the massive footprint of just people that are involved in an NFL game or an NFL event. What the NFL is doing here, I think, is they're exercising some soft power. You can't mandate a vaccine, but that to play in the NFL is not a right. It's a privilege, right? Like any job that pays this much, like there's more to it than just like, well, I can do it if I want, right? It's hard to do. So I commend them for these strong guidelines because A, it's responsible. You remember last year how, you know, how tough they were on every single team, even up into the playoffs. Remember Mahomes had that scare with the haircut and Everyone was like, is this guy going to miss the Super Bowl? Like Those were real concerns. The only reason we got to the Super Bowl is because the NFL did an amazing job of keeping everything buttoned up. So I think that this is a really intriguing story to watch because the thing that we've learned about these vaccines is people, once they sort of see people they know getting them, they become a little bit more open to them. So I think good for the NFL. Like like it or not, they're sort of forcing players to have a disadvantage by not taking them or take them. And like, that's great. We're going to have a better discussion about it as a result as a country, which like not to be like too highfalutin, but I do think that that's an impact here.
It is an impact. And remember, the NFL is a private business. They could have any protocols They want, which is important to discuss here because the people that tend to, you know, kind of be against it, you know, well, you know, you're for private business. It's their own decision. And yes, I think they're trying to put peer pressure on the players that aren't vaccinated, right? You get in the facility. I mean, look, imagine if I'm in an offensive line, I'm in an offensive line room and three of five starters are vaccinated, two are not. Then that'd be odd, right? Like, am I meeting with the other two guys in the same room? Am I lifting with them? Am I traveling with them? Do I get to talk to them in the locker room? I'm not trying to form some sort of chemistry bond like that. So the peer pressure of that could lead to more players getting vaccinated. And again, the bottom line is that the NFL wants to make their money this year. Remember, this is a conservative NFL, right? Conservative ownership, conservative at the very top. And if they're going this direction, to your point, they're trying to salvage an entire season, not have any mistakes. And people have said, well, they're going to enforce this. Hell yeah, they're going to enforce this. Heck yes, they're going to enforce this. If you think they're not, you did not pay attention last season.
Yep. $1 billion business. There's consequences when things break. I'm just curious, like, do you think, you know, how do you think this gets handled in most locker rooms? Like, the thing that, the locker room that comes to mind for sure to me is the Bucks. Where the leader of that team, you know, you mentioned Arians, but the leader of that team, I'm just going to guess, is probably not a front runner candidate to get vaccinated. You know, a guy who has his own health method and some pretty out there beliefs about some other things. I'm just curious, like, does this have the potential to like to break a team? Like, could we look at some team that's awesome and they've just fall apart because there's like a massive political disagreement in their locker room about these?
I think Tom Brady, if he knew to help him win a Super Bowl, he'll take any shot. He would take any shot if it helped him win a Super Bowl. Like, I think he does take any shot to help him win a Super Bowl. I would say this might be the test case. I don't know. Obviously, Tom, but look, we'll be able to tell when we get to training camp, right? Who's wearing masks? Who feels a little isolated? My guess is obvious. I think Tom would have done that. But yeah, it will create a divide in the locker room because, again, you're not going to be with your teammates that you're going to rely on Sunday because they haven't taken the vaccine yet. And again, I don't think players are going to say, hey, Matt Ford, take the vaccine now and like argue in the locker room. But there's going to be peer pressure when like 9 of the 11 guys on offense are all hanging out in the locker room and the two guys are isolated in their own locker room. And at what point do they say, man, I just can't do this anymore? And especially if it hurts the team eventually, right? If there are players on that team that can't play because they're in the protocol or because they get COVID or whatever reason, and, you know, and part of it too is, you know, if you're vaccinated according to the NFL protocols, if you're a high risk exposure, so let's say, you know, I'm with my family and my wife got COVID, I'm vaccinated, I don't have to quarantine.
Right.
If that same situation happens, I'm unvaccinated, I quarantine 14 days still. And so now you're out two games, right? So that, I think when those situations arise is when it will really, and when it really could divide a team. But again, when the guys at the top, Bruce Arians, Mike Tomlin, I don't know what Andy Reid's done, but Patrick Mahomes, Matt Ryan, when I throw Cam Hayward in there, I saw his name in one of these articles. When the guys at the top, Justin Herbert, I saw Justin had taken it. When they're at the top, that message resonates with people, right? It resonates with not just, I think, the players, but fans, but the players, right? Okay, if Pat Mahomes is doing this, or Tom Brady's doing this, or my head coach is doing it, I trust him, right? My trainers tell me to do it. My doctors tell me to do it. I trust him for other things, and maybe I'll trust him for this as well, and it moves in that direction where players obviously can get vaccinated. I mean, again, the way this season goes off without a hitch is that, right, Matt? And again, the competitive disadvantage for teams with low vaccination rates is going to be bad. And again, I imagine by the end of training camp, you know, they're at 75-80% full vaccination, which is really good, right? That's herd immunity. But obviously for those unvaccinated players, they're still, you know, lingering over you as those protocols, which I think the NFL will carry throughout the season. I don't think this will be just for the preseason for training camp.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I wonder if that data is going to be publicly available, because if we do know who's been vaccinated, who isn't, we will be betting on the under for the team wins.
I mean, for those teams. I think that what we'll be able to tell, like based off, like I said, like who's wearing a mask at practice, who's not wearing a mask. Like, I think that's like the easiest way, right? I mean, if you are vaccinated, you're free to do that. Yep. And look, guys, another thing too that people, the NFL is allowed to ask you for your vaccine status. Yes. It's not a HIPAA violation. The HIPAA violation is not at all your employer asking you about that, especially in this situation, a private company. It's like if they called my doctor and my doctor released information without me telling them, right? Like they can't, so they can, and then I might even butcher that as well. I'm sorry if I butchered that, but I know for a fact it's not an NFL team asking if you're vaccinated. That's not a violation of your HIPAA rights. I think I kind of sort of got it right, where it's like a hospital releasing information against your will or a doctor's office. It's not, or honestly, the NFL, we call the NFL up, we call the Giants up and say, hey, I want Jeff Schwartz's records. You say, no, that's a HIPAA violation. That's how it works, right? Not within employer. So yes, not a HIPAA violation. And by the way, it's always ironic, right? The people that always say that came and spell HIPAA right. It's just the best thing of all time. So, all right. I'm sure
I had to show my vaccine card to get into the Brooklyn Nets game as a fan.
Which game do you go to?
I went to game 2, which was a massive blowout, but it was insane.
So can you use your, like my, like I could go to my healthcare system in North Carolina in Charlotte and pull up my vaccine on your phone. You have to show them your physical card or your vaccine? Or like,
I was able to, in New York, they have a thing that you can, that it's like an app that shows you've got your vaccine.
So they only let people in who are vaccinated, or there was a special section for that?
I'm not totally sure, but I know that there was fully vaccinated sections where if you got in, like, as soon as you got to your section, like, mask off, like, everyone's vaccinated. It was pretty wild, man. It was really something.
I went to my first sporting event this weekend. I went to two Angels games, and nice. Ohtani, by the way, hit three home runs while we were there, and I missed all three of them. Like, I was out of my seat for two of them doing some stuff, and then the other one we had left. I saw him pop up though one time, and that was. He's really dude's electric, but wasn't it nice to be back in the crowd?
Amazing. Yeah. It was overwhelming to be there for like a playoff basketball game in person. And you're just like, what the hell is going on? Like, I don't know. It's nice to be back to life. Everyone should get effing vaccinated. let's move on to, we already talked HIPAA. We might as well talk Supreme Court. Big ruling in college sports, the day we're taping this Monday, from the Supreme Court, they ruled unanimously in favor of college athletes seeking benefits tied to education. This basically just means that players are going to be able to earn any money while they're still college athletes. There's so much going on here. The NCAA has a meeting later in this month where they're sort of figuring out some of these eligibility and paid players things. To be honest, Jeff, I'm not even exactly sure what the Supreme Court ruling means.
I'll tell you what it means, because I do this, you know, for Pac-12 Today on Pac-12 Radio for a living. So what this was a lawsuit brought for, as you mentioned, for types of education-related benefits, internships, laptops, like anything that you can get that's kind of outside your scholarship. This was a lawsuit about that, okay? And they won that. So it's not really about name, image, and likeness, which I'll get to in just a second. However, Justice Kavanaugh wrote this at the end, okay, in his opinion. Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing to not pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate. The NCAA is not above the law. Now, that's not really about this, right? That's about the name, image, and likeness, which is happening July 1st. So name, image, and likeness essentially is you can market yourself, right? Which in any other business we can do. Any other business you can, even in college, if you are a student, a regular student on a financial aid scholarship or another type of scholarship, guess what? You can get that money for your scholarship and then also make endorsement money if you're a violinist or whatever, right? Or anything else. Except in college sports, that's not allowed. It's changing all now because name, image, and likeness was a bill introduced in California. It got passed. Now, it's not supposed to take place till 2023, but Florida and a bunch of other states are starting July 1st. So the NCAA has been dragging their feet as usual, has been holding out on coming up with some sort of policies and protocols put in place for name, image, and likeness. And now, because they foolishly went down this road with this lawsuit, by the way, $73 million in legal fees to go down this route. If they had not done this and just come up with a way to give, you know, athletes laptops, then they don't get this Justice Kavanaugh ruling, which basically tells them, hey, buddy, if you try to restrict future earnings moving forward, you're going to lose that case too, right? So name, image, and likeness is going to be something that happens July 1st. Now, whether or not it's the final thing they do, I'm sure it'll be different variations, but it's happening. So basically, Jeff Schwartz goes to Oregon. Jeff Schwartz, you know, there's a car dealership there, wants to pay Jeff Schwartz $5,000 to go sign autographs at the car dealership. I can get that money now. My jersey sales, whatever it is. I will say, though, a couple things. People think name, image, likeness is going to, quote unquote, ruin college sports. It's not going to ruin college sports. I think in the end, very few athletes are going to take big advantage of this, right? We're going to see 5 to 7 football players get good endorsement deals. The rest of the football team might get a hometown $1,000 to go to touchdown club, like a $500 to do this and that, get some spending money, get some little extra cushion money. It's not going to be this huge rush, right? We're going to see some social media deals, but a lot of the players are not marketable without the university. And that's, I think, people are missing here. Like, I think we've gone so far in one direction, Matt, where people are saying scholarships don't matter at all. No, they matter. There's value in a scholarship. There's value in the brand associated with playing for that team. But also, the players should be allowed to market themselves. And with this ruling, it's heading in that direction. So it's a pretty big day. I mean, 9-0, Matt. Unanimous. Like, who? What in round politics right now is 9-0?
Yeah, it's a law initiated by the state of California, confirmed by Brett Kavanaugh. That seems pretty unusual.
Yes, right, exactly.
I mean, that's interesting, because I was going to come out swinging and just say, like, this is the beginning of the end with college sports, not necessarily
It is with amateurism. Amateurism is done. This idea that they're not pros. However, okay, so you're a Big Ten guy because of Maryland, right? So Ohio State, I mean, look, okay, is Maryland still does the Under Armour thing? Is that you guys still?
Sort of. Yeah.
So let's say the head of Under Armour, there's a 5-star recruit, and so he's looking at Ohio State. Maybe the head of Under Armour says, you know what, we're going to give you $100,000 to come play for Maryland and be an Under Armour guy. I mean, how many guys is he really going to do that to? Because the return on investment, they want some return on investment, right? He's already giving money to the school. If they get 2 or 3 of these 5-star players, is that going to make a difference in the way they play? Maybe. And maybe if it does, they start trying to buy more players. But really, Ohio State's still going to be good, Matt. I mean, you might chip off 1 or 2 players. Oregon might get a couple players that might go to Oklahoma. USC might chip away some players. I just don't think it's going to change recruiting. Because also, guess what? Players already get paid now. They already get paid now. So like, now what's going to change? It's just legal payment. What I will say, a lot of people I've talked to think there are pockets, like BYU, for example, very strong, kind of rich alumni, like a place like that, like Jimmer Fredette, for example. My buddy says he would have made millions of dollars in Provo. Like, there's certain examples here and there where guys can make money, but I just don't think it changes recruiting very much. I think that it doesn't change college football very much or college basketball. Just, look, it could get very messy. There's going to be a lot of scams out there, so I hope these institutions have people in place to help their athletes figure out exactly, like, where they should, you know, what endorsements they should get, what they should be looking for. And I understand some of the, like, if you're a Nike school, you can't have a player endorsed by Under Armour. Like, you know, I get that. That's fair to not have that. But it's going to be a free-for-all, and we're going to see, too, these paid internships that are going to be allowed. Whew. That's where some of this is going to start, right? Matt Ford, how about you come to Under Armour and we give you $75,000 for the summer?
It's going to be, I think you've laid out all of the, like, tame possible outcomes and some of the, like, nice upsides. This will get exploited so badly, and all of the, like you mentioned Maryland and the Under Armour connection, like, that would in theory work out in my benefit, right? Like, but should Maryland have the ability to sign so-and-so because, you know, the CEO the former CEO and founder of Under Armour went to Maryland and now they have these deep pockets and they can pay the next, whatever, Cade Cunningham to come to Maryland? Like, that sucks. Yeah, and I feel like, and even though that was kind of an open secret, there was this illusion in college sports that, like, there was some community, right? Like, some kid picks Oregon or Maryland or whatever because they like the school, and then the fans are like, cool, we have this in common, like, there's this, like, shared experience. But if it becomes the professional sports at all, then what are college sports but just worse professional sports? Like, yeah. That's what I'm sort of starting to wonder, is like, what does this look like? And by the way, let's not forget, there are more sports in college athletics than men's football and men's basketball. Like, this is going to have far-reaching impacts on the quote-unquote non-revenue sports, which obviously means a lot of, like, women's sports and even just, like, you know, track and swimming and all these other sports that really matter to a lot of schools. Lacrosse matters a lot to Maryland. Like, I just think that the impacts of where we're headed, not necessarily this case, they're so far wide ranging, and it does not lead to anything good for the NCAA, especially since they have no leader and no one guiding this. They're just kind of reacting and making it up.
So two things. One is that, so if you're a business person, right, and you have a lot of money and you've been donating to your school, right, you typically want a return on investment on that donation, right? So you're donating to a school, they put your name on the thing, but you want to win, right? You want to win in sports.
Yeah.
So I'm just not sure that these boosters, who may or may not already be paying players, really want to put that much money into, quote unquote, buying players, right? Because again, if you spend $500,000, $1 million, and you don't win a championship, you don't win your conference, I think you're going to see this as an investment not worth it over time. And maybe they just are free to blow money. I mean, it's definitely possible. But secondly, you mentioned other sports, basically Olympic sports. So the Olympic trials have been on for swimming, and they were on for track and field this past weekend. We have college baseball's on right now. We've seen softball. So I think this helps them more than any other group, because now an Olympian swimmer, track and field, softball, baseball, they can take endorsement money and stay in college. A lot of them have to leave college, especially on the swimming side, because they want to take their Jeremy Bloom, Olympic skier, played football at Colorado, played football a little bit in the NFL. He had to leave Colorado as it's a freshman All-American because he was going to go ski in the Winter Olympics. And he's like, I'm going to take endorsement money. They're giving me endorsement money. I'm taking it. And he left Colorado and his career. Now he bounced around a little bit in the NFL, but now Jeremy Bloom gets to stay in Colorado if he so chooses to do so. So I think it does help the Olympic sports. Again, a lot, maybe not, but more than it did now.
Yeah. It's going to really be interesting. And again, what the NCAA decides to do on July 1st is also going to have a huge impact. This story is not going away. And I just can't believe that there's not a Adam Silver of the NCAA who's in front of this, who's throwing ideas out there, who's just getting the temperature on stuff. It's sort of just up to the person who's got the best idea right now is Brett Kavanaugh. It's what are we doing here? We need somebody to start making some calls and figuring this thing out.
The NCAA is just rudderless, man. They hate making decisions. It's
unbelievable.
They hate actually having to do something. And now, and look, they're waiting for supposedly Congress to give them an antitrust exemption. You ain't getting that, buddy.
No.
You just need to make this and your model's done, man. Get over it.
Yeah, this we will look back in a matter of years and be like, college kids didn't get paid and they were Trevor Lawrence didn't get paid. That's crazy.
Exactly.
So moving on, let's just go right to move the line, Jeff. It's been a while since we've gotten to do some of these over-unders. Usually you do this with Gabe, so I'm thrilled to sort of play this game with you. There's so many fun things to talk about. First of all, there was a report that came out today that Justin Fields is going to show up to Chicago's camp 2 weeks early. And the internet, of course, just lost its mind with enthusiasm that Justin Fields will be, so eager to dive in and learn that everyone just is sort of blown away by him. So my question, Jeff, over or under, 10 and a half games started for Justin Fields in Chicago this season?
I'm just this show reporting 2 weeks early is just a nothing burger. He's just going to show up at the facility 2 weeks early. It doesn't mean very much. He can't work out with the coaches, I don't think. So he's just going to work out by himself at the facility. These are stories that a bunch of players probably roll their eyes at. All right, well, this one's tough, man. I think over. I think he starts more. I think he's the starter from nearly week one. I know Dalton, blah, 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 but how do you, Matt Nagy, he's fighting for his job, man. You need to win now and show the winning comes from the young quarterback. If you go 4-4 with Dalton and then you bring in Fields and he's 2-6, you ain't keeping your job, man. You're much better keeping your job if you see him improve throughout the season.
I am saying it right now. Justin Fields will start 15 or more games if he's healthy. And I like him for rookie of the year, Jeff. 7-1 currently. Andy Dalton's not starting over this kid. It's just not happening. And you can see the media machinations already starting of, well, he was there early. He outworked Dalton. He won the team over. This is so obvious, dude. If Andy Dalton was the starter for any team, we'd know it. He absolutely sucked last year. Ben DiNucci was not markedly worse than him. I think that there's no chance that Justin Fields isn't the day one starter. Maybe the week two starter if, Matt Nagy needs to keep playing silly games.
If he's either the week one starter or he starts in week five or six, right?
It won't be that long.
I'm with you there. I think it comes out of camp. I think most of these guys start out of camp.
I mean, at this point, it's like, what is the benefit? Like, we've seen now over and over and over again, even in a COVID offseason where Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert couldn't practice in the same way that everyone else could, you know, in years past, and they came out and were gangbusters. I can't see it, man. He played at Ohio State. Like, he didn't play at North Dakota State. Like, he's ready. I just think this is so silly. Like, everyone should jump on Justin Fields rookie of the year now if you think that he's got a chance.
So that's actually a good call. I mean, the Nets have been killing me, man. I need to make some money back.
We'll get to some more betting stuff in a minute. Back to over-unders, also betting stuff. Okay, this one. So there was a promo today, drops for the HBO program The Shop, where Tom Brady, who we already mentioned his weird face, he came out and said something about a team that did not want him because they were sticking with someone else, and he said some silly expletive joke.
He said like they're sticking with that MF-er.
Yeah, and the internet like went insane. So my question to you, over under 90% confident you know what team he was talking about.
So I feel fairly certain it's Jimmy G, but people point out to me that he's friendly with Jimmy Garoppolo and he doesn't think he would say that. Mm-hmm. People point out the Bears and Trubisky. I just never thought there was a connection there. People have said Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee. I don't think that's it either. I don't think he thought Tennessee because of their defense was not very good. I don't know. I think it's Jimmy G, but you think you know who it is.
Yeah, I'm over 90% sure.
Who is it?
It is the New Orleans Saints. I'm going to tell you why. Last year, there was a report from Adam Schefter that came out after Brady had signed with the Bucks that said there was mutual interest between Brady and the Saints. And then Drew Brees decided to come back. And then they sort of said, we got Brees. We got to go with Brees. Now, Brady, you think he is, you know, pretty classy dude from most exterior, you know, objective observation. He has a rivalry with Brees. Like, not only did they end up in the same division and, of course, playing in the playoffs, they also have the touchdown and passing yards record. Correct. Where they're going back and forth over and over and over again. And Brady knew Brees was washed. We all knew Brees was washed. And nobody knows what a washed 42-year-old quarterback looks like more than a guy who's trying every day not to be that. So I think it was Drew Brees. And if Tom Brady had ended up with the Saints, I mean, think about that sliding doors of what could have happened.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I'm pretty confident that's so who
Drew
it was.
Brees. I've not heard that one yet.
Yeah, I know. I was excited to drop that one.
I know. That's a good one. I mean, I don't put it past you that it's Drew Brees. I just, you know, maybe Carr?
I don't think so. I don't think Tom Brady would speak so condescendingly about a guy who is not in his class. And I think that that's why he was so sharp on this. Like, he doesn't view Derek Carr as competition for him, right? He doesn't view Mitch Trubisky as competition for him. And I just want to read what Schefter had said. This was this February he reported this. Brees came back in March. If he hadn't come back, I really believe there's a chance Tom Brady would have been the Saints quarterback this year. That's what Schefter told Rich Eisen. So... I think that's what it was.
Ooh, Matt, look at you coming. You've been saving that quote, haven't you? I love
Clip that shit. I want to share it. I think I can get some buzz.
You've been saving. We will make an audiogram of that one. That's fantastic. All right. I didn't know you were. I was curious where that was going. Okay, let's Drew Brees it up.
Let's go. All right. Well, we've earned a Taylor Heineke topic after I gave you all that fire on the last one, Jeff. Ron Rivera said there is a quarterback competition in Washington. The reports out of camp have been that Taylor Heineke has actually looked better than Fitzpatrick. Now, Fitzpatrick has said, look, I'm throwing the ball where they're supposed to go. The receivers and I are going to get on the same page. But apparently Heineke has looked crisp and Fitzpatrick has looked a little bit shaky. So... my question, Jeff, to that question about is there a competition, over under Taylor Heineke starts this year, let's put it at 3.5 because that would be substantial.
Are we assuming that this is a healthy Fitzpatrick and he's starting?
Yes, assuming healthy.
He will not play a game this year if Fitzpatrick is healthy.
Zero games.
Zero games this year, yeah. I mean, maybe week 18 and they're out of it, but he will not get any significant time if Fitz is healthy.
Okay, I agree that Fitz is going to win this competition, if that even is a thing. My question is, like, why exactly are we, have we all written off the possibility that Taylor Heinicke might be kind of good? Like, tell me why exactly.
Well, it'd be very rare for a quarterback of his kind of draft class and stature to be good in the NFL. That's why. It's very rare.
But it happens. It happened with Fitzpatrick. It happened with Kurt Warner.
But Fitz is not, like, if you drafted Fitz, you just drafted a good quarterback. There'd be no chance to win a Super Bowl, right? Like, that's the goal, right? Is to win a Super Bowl. And Heinicke is just not that guy, I think.
But wait, hold on. You're saying Fitzpatrick isn't a guy who's good enough to win you a Super Bowl.
I'm saying, well, you have a better chance with him than Heinicke. I'm not saying you're going to win a Super Bowl with Fitzpatrick. But Heinicke,
I just think that, I'm half kidding,
like,
kind of.
Ron Rivera doesn't strike me as like a play random young guy quarterback. Like,
I don't think he is either. I'm just curious if, like, here's what we actually know about Taylor Heinicke. Bounced around. Was okay, you know, wasn't great in Carolina with Rivera. Then he played one game in the playoffs against the team that won the Super Bowl with a great defense and did not embarrass himself at all. Like, I'm just curious why we've all, like, it just seems like everyone's kind of making him a punchline. But why? Like, I feel like there should be a competition. Like, if he's good enough to unseat Fitzpatrick, like, let's see it.
Well, we're going to see the competition. I just don't think he's good enough to unseat him. That's the difference. Like, there's a competition, but I can't see him winning it, dude.
Yeah. Well, I would take the under here too, but I am just curious why everyone has written Heinicke off when all we've seen is him played pretty well. All right. Well, those are the big ones I have for this. Any other stuff you want to hit before I ask you a very pressing gambling question?
Well, we're going gambling. You hit me with a gambling question because we got to talk about how eagerly excited you are for week one bets. You don't have to tell me any bets you made, but Matt is very, very excited. He has already wagered in the NFL season. Let's hear your hedge.
Well, I guess let's start there so I look smart, and then we can talk about how dumb I am. So on June 15th, so not that long ago, I felt this was longer ago, I took the Hawks to win the Eastern Conference plus 1250. Ooh. So I think they were tied with Philly at that point, and the odds were still crazy. And by the way, if you like the Hawks, they're still like 11-1 to win the title. There's four teams left. Like, what am I missing here? But Jeff, I bet $8 to win 100. Okay. That's how, I mean, not very confident, but granted, I'm not a big bettor over here. Okay. So that's pretty good, man. Like, a $100 win would be nice. Should I hedge it? Should I go and take the Bucks? Like, I genuinely just, like, don't know how to do this now. So I'm curious what you think I should do. The Bucks are minus 477 to win this series, so I'd have to lay a lot of juice to hedge this.
So I think the reason you hedge, or the reason people will tell you to hedge, is so you make some money, right? So you're winning, what, $92 on that? It's $8 to win 100, you said. Okay.
Yeah.
To win, so you're winning $100 on that one bet. So, you know, you basically just want to bet as much as you can to get the $8 back if the Bucks win, right? Like, I mean, that's basically how you do it. So what you have to bet is 4-1, right? So what, $36, somewhere around there, $40?
Yeah, but, like, who cares back about my $8? Like, I don't care about that.
So the answer is you do not hedge. Absolutely not. Or you find moments in the series to take the Bucks on the money line, which will probably be a cheaper price than their series price.
Mm.
Right? So, like, let's say a closeout game. Even that, but, like, let's say, like, let's look at the, I'm curious what the line is for game one. Yeah, so to win game one, they're minus 290. So you could take the game one, which they're at home, they're obviously off a big win, but they have one extra day and to rest. They're at home. You take a minus 290, you win the $8 back, and then you just sit pretty.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. So I shouldn't put like 50 to like try to win 50 and like lose.
We talked this through about how my Tampa Bay plus 1100 future bet. Remember for the Super Bowl? And we were like, well, do I put, I was going to win 550. Do I put like 250 on the Chiefs, and then I still win some money in the end. But for $8, man, let it freaking ride, bro. Or like I said, or you just take the Bucks money line at some point in the series, and yep, you can try to make that $8 back, right? I mean, you might lose that bet, and then then you're down more, even more money. But if you feel good about the Bucks, minus 290 in game one, then that's where you make your money back, right? If you're trying to hedge that bet.
There's some other weird way I could maybe do this, which is bet all the exact finals outcomes that don't include Atlanta. Like, I could bet like the Bucks to beat the Clippers plus 700.
Yeah, but Matt, you don't care that much, buddy.
This is the thing, Jeff. This is why I lose, because even when I have a good bet, I'm going to end up losing somehow anyways, even though that was a great call and I stand by it and I'm glad
let it ride, buddy. Like, make your $8 back on somewhere else. Here, I'll give you some obscure baseball game to bet tonight. There's reverse line movement in Twins Reds for the Twins money line tonight.
It goes, so take the Twins.
So the Twins were plus 110 to open. They're plus 104. 36% of bets, 65% of tickets. The Reds went from 130 to minus 130 to minus 114 with 64% of the tickets. So there's some good reverse line movement there. So that's there. Maybe you take that in the money line and you see it, let it ride.
Oh, all right. Well,
one thing I've been doing, by the way, I've just been taking the run lines against the Orioles because their Orioles are so bad. Just run lining every game. Screw it.
I have $8 on the line on the Minnesota Twins tonight. Yes. So then I could be playing with house money.
Yes. Let's go, Twins.
All right, so this is the part where it's like, usually you hear people about their bets and they're like so proud because they don't tell you like what it really is like.
Of course.
And look, Jeff, it's clear. I think a lot about the NFL. I think about the NFL probably every day, and there's not a really good reason why. I'm in like a couple of really aggressive fantasy leagues, but there's no reason I'm thinking about the NFL this much in June. I just went to my betting account and just looked. I was like, I think I've made some week one bets already, which is like really silly because like anything could happen. A meteor could destroy the city of Detroit. Like anything's possible. These lines could really move as a result of that, that meteor. Jeff, I have 11 week one bets already.
11?
I don't even really recall making, but I have 11 of them.
There's only 16 games.
I bet almost
the
whole board. I know. There's a few I've bet a few times because I've seen the line change over time. And I'm like, oh, that's a good line. Let me just snag that early. And I just have no recollection of having done any of that.
I know when the lines first came out for week one, you were all over a Washington football team, right?
Yeah. So, yes, I have them on the money line and then they dipped. And now I have them plus, I think I have them plus 1.5 and plus 1, I think. No, just one. Just plus 1.
So there's our friend Chris Raybon, who's like now wearing a suit, doing like a bunch of stuff on like NBA and TNT. It's awesome. I think that's where he's at for action. He has
big time on us.
He did get big time. He has a week one bet that I loved. Here we go. Seattle, so they're plus 2.5, plus 3. Frank Reich is 0-3 straight up in week one with losses to the 1-15 Jacksonville Jaguars, the 5-11 Chargers, and the 6-10 Bengals.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is this bet number 12? Is that what's about to happen here?
Maybe. Harbaugh minus 4, Ravens minus 4, are they still minus 4 at Las Vegas? Harbaugh 10-3 against the spread in week one. Most profitable week one in our Action Labs database going back 2003. I'm making that bet right now.
Wow. Yeah, maybe it's a little two team tease there, Seahawks and Ravens.
Like,
maybe.
Or
maybe.
No, you won't tease the Ravens through, I mean, plus 2, I don't know. I'll just take a money line. Just parlay them, right?
Yeah, that's... I don't have money line available on here, but that's pretty interesting. Look at this,
I have a minus 220 money line for the Ravens. I'm going to do the Ravens sea chickens right now. We're gonna have a bird.
That's the first game with the crowd in Las Vegas, and you're going...
A bird parlay. The parlay pays off. Wait, why can't I put the Ravens in here? Wait, what? It won't let me parlay these. Wait, what's going on here?
Jeff, I think this is the sign that we should probably end the podcast.
No. Hey, where's my I'm trying to parlay this, man. It won't let me do it. Maybe it's too early. I don't know. But, I mean, well, there we go, guys. I made my first week one bet of the year. Ravens minus four. All right, guys. Great show today. We covered a lot today. It was a good time as usual. We're back next week. I believe Gabe will join me next week, and we'll off and roll, man. Look, we're only 9 weeks away from college football. August 28th, UCLA hosts Hawaii, week zero. So we're getting close. Have a great week, everyone. Talk to you guys next week. Out.